We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to part two of our preview of the Nuggets series. I'm Pete, joined by Darius and Mike. You're listening to the Laker Film Room podcast. The part one was more focused on the offensive end. We'll jump around a little bit in this one, but this one's going to be a little more tilted toward the defensive end. And Darius, the Denver Nuggets in last season's series, one of my lasting impressions of that were just the freaking shot making that they had. And especially in comparison to the Lakers, but just in general, like Jamal Murray, Nikola Jokic, obviously the Sambor shuffles that he was hitting, things like that. And just the jump shooting of the team in general was super impressive. And they're one of the very best offenses in the league. And so today we're going to talk a little bit about what Lakers can do to help slow them down. And I think that's an operative way of looking at it, D, is that this is not a team you're going to stop on the offensive end, but it does start with Jokic. And so I'll give you just a quick question before you start talking more broadly, D. To double or to not to double Jokic, where do you stand on kind of how we need to approach defending him?
So I think it depends on who's defending him. I think it depends on who else is in the game. I think for the most part, though, you single cover him and show appropriate help, as you would show help on any other kind of player when they get to their certain spots on the floor. The issues with Jokic is that once he gets to a certain spot on the floor at all, there's only one player who can help on him who actually is showing the appropriate level of help that I think that can disrupt him. And if that player is already defending Jokic, then you've lost, essentially, that possession. So I am in favor of playing Jokic straight up as often as possible and living with the results. I also have ideas in terms of lineup construction that I think allow you to better position the team to be able to help on him more. But that's a discussion we'll get into more. Where are you at? Or are we going to ask Mike the same question before we get back to you?
Yeah, let's ask Mike first where he's at. To double or not to double Nikola Jokic?
Can I reject the premise of the question?
Please.
It's both, right? It's both. But yeah. If I had to pick between the two, I don't think that letting Jokic go, like letting him cook, is the way. I think that you have to try and see if every freaking Nuggets player is going to make all their shots again. And not like wide open shots, not saying you don't close out late and late contest, but they lose something without Bruce Brown offensively. And I thought he actually hurt them probably more on the offensive end than he did the defensive end last year, especially in transition and just trying to drive it right down their throat. And, you know, who are they bringing in off the bench this year that's really going to do much to scare you offensively? I'm not sure that it's anybody. But the starting group and their actions and their pet actions around, you know, Jokic and sure the screen roll. But even if you just don't if you just let Jokic go, Pete, I think that's just death. I think he's shown that he's going to put you right under the basket, and that includes Anthony Davis, who almost nobody else in the league can do that to. So my if I'm playing along, I guess I'm going to veer towards don't let him do it, and you do have to double and you do have to rotate and all that. But I know that it's got to be a mix of different looks, of course, with him.
For sure. Yeah, I'm on that perspective as well. I actually think that it's important for the Lakers to have a couple of looks that dictate the terms and that are harder type of traps. And I think the when we talk about superstardom in the NBA, so much we view it through an offensive lens, but kind of how LeBron and AD doubled up on Zion in that first game against them and how excellent they were there. I think they're going to have to do something similar. Now, it's a different player, different job, and all that. But I think that one of my concerns, D, about the keep one guy on him and soft double and dig, right, but don't fully commit to a double, is that it sort of puts the ball in Jokic's court rather than dictating, like, we're going to make you throw a skip pass, for example. That's something that I think that high hands and active, like, LeBron and AD's help defense on the weak side is versus a 4-on-3, I think is the best tools that we have to be able to double and then recover. And so that requires both guys to be off of the ball, which I don't think we'll be able to do. It would probably require a trap of one of them. But I think that them as help defenders and being able to be in rotation is super important. But to Mike's point, not just in this pod, but throughout, is that that's a great ask in terms of energy. And so the frequency that you can hard double and fly around on the perimeter is, you can't do that for 48 over the course of 7 games. But I think they need to turn that dial up as much as possible. I also think LeBron is our best Jokic defender in a one-on-one circumstance. And so I don't think that he can do that for 48 minutes, but I do think that that is something that turning that dial up as much as possible. And I'll get into some of my rationale why on Jokic, but simply put, D, I think that he can disrupt Jokic's ball handling in ways that other guys that can hold their ground against him can't, especially Rui, right? Now, AD can help on that over-the-top type of plane, but Jokic is so big that he can back him down, like Mike was saying, a couple feet from the rim, and then just softly fade away, and he's just elite at that little six-foot shot, and AD has less to bother him with. So I think you have to bother Jokic before he gets into his shooting motion, which is true of, I think, a lot of superstars, and that he requires a second guy, which is also true of a lot of stars. So yeah, I have a different point of view on it than you do on this, D.
I think that those points are fair. I think playing into the idea of Jokic being a passer is as much death as anything else. And I think you can talk about doubling a player as much as you want. The Nuggets are crafty enough to still get him to the spots where he's very likely to still be able to score 20 plus points, even when he's getting a diet of double teams. And I think you open up the possibility of him for sure being a like 15, 16, 17 assist player when you consistently send help to him. I think their offense is well oiled enough. I think the strategies we need to talk about when defending Jokic is how to defend him in the first place and not what happens after he catches the ball.
Okay, so what do you see
there? After he catches the ball, mm-hmm. I think Jokic's catches are way too easy. I watch some of these other teams defend Jokic and they are in straight up ball denial. We do not want you to catch mm-hmm. the ball. One of the things about Jokic is he's a big man. He brings the ball up plenty. And I think that if he was a point guard, this would be much harder. He's not a point guard. He's still a center. He is not going to initiate offense both as a top of the key player and dribble the ball into his ideal spot on the court every single possession. That's what guards do. Centers do not do that. And so even though the Nuggets run a version of five out offense, even though he is in the middle of it all, even though he brings the ball up a fair amount and they play through him at the top of the key, for all of the times that he is essentially going to be a hub and an isolation player, which is basically him catching the ball at the elbow, him catching the ball at the low post, I think they need to make his catches much harder. Much, 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 much harder. Go back and watch the Miami series. Go back and watch even matchups between them and Dallas, for example. I was watching some matchups between Jokic and Daniel Gafford, for example. And Gafford is playing three quarters yep. on him all of the time. And it's a natural function of, we actually do not want you to touch the basketball as often as you're touching the basketball. Go look at NBA tracking data and tell me who leads the league in touches. by like a massive amount, it's Nikola Jokic. And I think if you can start to chip away at how many touches he is getting within a natural flow of Denver's offense, or making them have to play harder to get him the ball in general, and this goes back to me and the idea of doing your work early against him. Mm-hmm. And that means like fronting him sometimes, like the different looks that you guys are talking about are all after he makes a catch. I'm talking about showing him different looks before he gets the basketball.
I love it. That's all part of it.
Well, I look at the LeBron AD part of this a little differently from most matchups, in that like when we're talking about this team entering the season, it's, you can't just ask LeBron and AD to do everything defensively because that's going to wear them down. And I totally believe that. And this was part of the whole thing of starting, you know, Prince with Russell and Reeves and the lack of size and athleticism. Well, now, first of all, you're starting Rui. Second of all, you're going to get some bench help with, from a defensive and athleticism standpoint, when you bring Hayes and Vincent in. And like there, the balance there, I think, is a little bit better. But what I just think, Pete, that LeBron and AD are the only two guys that can up yes. their level to the point that you made about LeBron being the best guy that, on Jokic. So knowing that LeBron's going to have just as heavy of a lift as he had trying to limit Zion, in fact, more by trying to limit Jokic, how much do you have him do it? What do you have to do to support that? How much does LeBron have to sacrifice of his offensive creation mm-hmm. that he has just done and likes to do and should? And the Lakers need, and that's the toughness. That's the tough part about playing Denver, because you really have to account for, it's not just like Jokic on offense. It's that he's going to plant himself and be much better defensively than you think. And you're not going to have as much juice on that end because of how much you have to devote to stopping this deadly offensive player. And that balance as to what you're going to ask for from LeBron and AD is super critical to me as to what the Lakers can do to actually not just beat the Nuggets like one time, but if you're going to beat them four times, mm-hmm. like having the juice and the energy to do that for your two stars is a lot.
Mike, what's Rui's role on the defensive end in this whole mix?
Well, Rui is the guy that you would think, because LeBron isn't going to be on Jokic for the whole time, that's going to have to bang into battle with Jokic. And then what does that do to Rui and his jump shot, which has just been automatic, and his offense, which has been elite, and him and all the potential duck-ins that he's had and that he just had against New Orleans in both of those play-in games. So I think that you have to shift Rui some, you know, to the defensive and rebounding and like those aspects that Denver is just so good at coming out on top of. But I think that that's part of the issue too, is that when you ask him to do more of that, mm-hmm. it's against his nature and the way that he's been playing. And that's why I think this is a complicated one. So let me flip that question right back to you.
I'm going to swing it over to Darius. So how do you see Rui defensively in this matchup, D?
So I think Rui, is going to spend time on every single one of the Nuggets' main front court players. I think the Lakers are going to do a fair amount of switching, 3 through 5. And I think everyone's going to get their chance against Jokic. And everyone's going to get their chance against Michael Porter Jr. And everyone's going to get their chance against Aaron Gordon. Rui, like everyone else, is going to need to be locked into some very different defensive matchups and understanding that there's a lot of information that's coming at him, and KYP is going to be super important. There's a defensive IQ idea that needs to exist in this very series. Like, I've been listening to LeBron talk a ton about basketball, and I think we're blessed to sort of have him on this podcast mm-hmm. where he just gets to spew out a bunch of basketball ideas and where his head is at around a bunch of different basketball philosophies. And one of the ideas that he's been presenting a lot on this podcast that he's been doing with JJ Redick is the idea of like basketball IQ and how you need it the deeper you get into the playoffs. Well, the Lakers are in round one against the Denver Nuggets, but this is a conference finals level matchup. They mm-hmm. just played this matchup in the conference finals last season. And so I kick it to you, Pete, in terms of like what you need from Rui. Forget from a defensive matchup perspective. I do think he's going to need to bang with Jokic. I do think he's going to need to bang with Aaron Gordon. I think he's going to need to rebound. I also think he's going to need to track Michael Porter Jr. coming off screens and be on the perimeter. And so for me, this is as much about being locked in on what your matchup is. And from a defensive IQ perspective, lifting his level up to the highest level it's been all season, because he needs to understand, who am I on? What are they doing? And what is my responsibility? And that could be different on possession three versus possession seven versus possession nine throughout the course of the ballgame.
And in Rui's instance, D, I think it's important to give him fewer, like give him a smaller menu to work from defensively. Of those three guys, he's the guy, in my opinion, who should have the least amount of variance in the guy that he's guarding and the different coverages that he's running. Give him the simpler type of jobs. And that's why the superstars make their money and they're great defensive players too. So let's take a break here because I think Aaron Gordon is a super important figure within this that also Rui plays into this as well. So let's take a break, come back, talk a little more about their front court.
Hey guys, Trudell here. What's going on with your teeth? I ask because mine are feeling and looking great thanks to Dr. Jonathan Goodbye. Dr. Goodbye is a lifelong Lakers fan. Example, when I first met him, we were discussing Phil Jackson's preferred second unit in 2009, so he knows his stuff. Then I walked into his state-of-the-art office in Beverly Hills, and it is nice. It's like a relaxing spa. It's got TVs in the ceiling that connect to your headphones so you can watch shows while you get your dental work done. They even give you this calming hot-scented towel on your face. If you have a healthy mouth, Dr. Goodbye can keep it that way. He also specializes in cosmetic transformations, including veneers, crowns, Invisalign, and implants. Dr. Goodbye works with his own in-house lab in Beverly Hills, so you know exactly what you're getting. Tell them that Mike Trudell sent you, and you'll get a full consultation, including 3D x-ray, for free. That's a $950 value. So if you're in the Los Angeles area and you need a dentist you can trust, call Dr. Goodbye, the official dentist of the Laker Film Room podcast, at 310-707-1005 or visit bhsmile.com.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Darius, we were talking after a pod about a month or two ago, and you're talking about Adam Morris, who covers the Nuggets, talking about how a lot of people view the Nuggets as their top three being Murray, Jokic, and Michael Porter Jr. But it's actually most of their actions, instead of Michael Porter Jr., it's Aaron Gordon is super involved in that. And then KCP and MPJ operate as satellites off of that, finding open spaces on the perimeter, cutting to the basket when they can, but really providing that perimeter spacing. I think that we talked about the Gordon-LeBron matchup with Gordon guarding LeBron. I think the other way around is actually I have more concern about that because one of the things that the Nuggets really like to do is put Gordon in that dunker spot and then have him make plays around the rim, cutting off of Jokic, cutting off of that. And I think that if you're getting LeBron in a standstill, that's one of the things for as players get older, one of the first things that they lose at a really elite level is the ability to jump super high without getting a running start. If you get LeBron out in transition, or if you get him out in, on a drop down rebound, he can totally sky up in the air and look great athletically. But from a dead stop, Aaron Gordon is going to be able to win a lot more of those battles than LeBron does. And so I view Rui as an important character battling with Gordon too, because as much of anything, he's not going to jump with Gordon, but he can put a body on him too in ways that we talk about, oh, you can't have LeBron guard Jokic because that's too much of wear and tear. It certainly is. Well, that factor plays into guarding Aaron Gordon too, where it's like you got to athletically deal with that dude around the rim, play after play after play. I think there's some fatigue and wear and tear in that too.
There's also just the idea of tracking him, Mike, and tracking Gordon, and even tracking MPJ around the court. There is a relocation idea, and what the Nuggets do better than any other team in the league is that when you decide to help on Jokic, you are playing 2-on-3 defensively, 2-on-3 or 1-on-2 in another part of the court where Jokic is very key then and very smart at capitalizing on that. How many times have you seen Jokic like whip the ball to Aaron Gordon ducking in behind a guard that has low man responsibilities then? And that's going to happen over and over and over again based off of the way that the Nuggets position their players. And so when you talk about Gordon versus LeBron in that way, it's a matter of putting LeBron in situations where he has to defend too. Mm. And one of those guys is Gordon, mm-hmm. who often has a running start. It's not that LeBron is flat-footed. Yes, he is. I honestly think that if you put him in a phone booth against another flat-footed player,
he's fine.
He is strong enough to then armbar that dude and be like, no.
And he knows
no.
the angles too, right? He's going to see that shot go up and like, I'm going to box you out at this angle and put a body on you and he's going to get it.
Gordon's rarely playing from a standstill, Mike. He's always on the move. He's always cutting in to space, and that amplifies his athleticism against players who are standing still. And I think that's a tricky part that we need to navigate within this defensive alignment and defensive structure as well.
I think Aaron Gordon is the most underrated player in the NBA. I think that he is discussed probably the least for how much he helps winning. The last player that makes me think of him is probably Andre Iguodala for what he did when he joined the Warriors. Mm-hmm. And even though Iguodala didn't start and, you know, Gordon does, but like they probably played somewhere around the similar minutes. And they, you know, Gordon isn't going to be considered for like a six man type of, because obviously, again, he's a starter, but and he's not going to be considered for any of these types of awards because Murray is the more flashy offensive player and in some ways more important at holding up and lifting a unit. But I just think Gordon is like, he's really good at a lot of things. He's huge. He's incredibly athletic. He works his ass off. He doesn't complain. He just helps win. They became who they are, of course, with Jokic's growth. And that's the main reason, period. But he's the thing that turned them into a team that mm-hmm. actually started to win series. The Lakers kicked their ass when it was Paul Millsap and whoever else was playing at that spot. Aaron Gordon is a better player. And so I think that you guys just broke down the specifics of it really well. But if I hear somebody listing the Denver Nuggets after Jokic, I'm like, you got to make the case for Murray over Gordon to me. Like,
really?
And I get it. Like, Murray is the guy that is a, if I had to pick, like, I'll go Jamal Murray. But to make my point almost, I want to make sure that Aaron Gordon is getting recognized for as good of a player as that I think that he is. And I just like that type of player who is just going to figure out what needs to happen for that team to win, who went from Orlando, miscast as kind of like the main guy, and now doesn't have to be that guy. And the last thing I want to say about him, he just only shoots, you know, he makes like 1 3 per game for his career. And last year he did hit a couple key ones against the Lakers, but I'm more worried about him cutting in and being in the dunker spot mm-hmm. and being there for the lob. And if he hits a couple of threes, fine. He's not going to hit five. He's not going to take that many. That's not what they want to do. He will give the ball back to Jokic and then relocate and then try to go get a dunk or something. So a lot there. I wanted to sort of speak to how much I think that Gordon is respected, like within kind of coaching circles and scouting report circles. And I think he's a really damn good player.
Pete, the other player that Mike didn't forget, but it was Jeremy Grant, right? And Jeremy Grant's a very good basketball player, and you could just see that Gordon has unlocked what Denver does mm-hmm. in a way that Jeremy Grant just couldn't. I would make the argument that Murray's their second best player and their second most important player.
I said it. I said he's their second. But I like Gordon being inserted into the conversation some, as opposed to like after Porter Jr. Like, no, stop.
I will say, though, that Gordon is their third best and third most important player, and I think the margin is much bigger between him and fourth and fifth than it is between second and third. I kick it now back to you, Pete, in terms of dealing with Gordon and then bringing Rui back in to this. What is your idea for how to best manage that?
So with respect to Gordon and Murray, it's funny, Mike, that you brought up sort of a spicy superlative about Gordon perhaps being their second best guy, or at least being in the argument, because I wanted to say something about Murray on this pod that I thought fit that. I think Jamal Murray is this, to give you an idea of how highly I think of him, I think he is the current holder of the title of the best player to ever to never make an all-star game. That used to be Spencer Haywood was kind of the guy that was by the end of NBA community considered to be the best guy to never make an NBA all-star game. I thought Lamar Odom had a great case for a really long time, but now I think Jamal Murray is the guy who has that title. This is a guy that I think is just criminally underrated. He is one of the greatest shot makers in the game, just can hit anything from any angle. Remember, even in 2020 in the series that we beat them, he was a handful. We had to put LeBron on him, a much younger LeBron on him, to try to slow him down at the end of that, just because of the type of shots that he was hitting. He was a guy, he's a guy that can get you 10 assists. He can get you 10 rebounds. He defends. He's scrappy. Remember that game earlier in the year, Mike, where we thought he was going to be listed out? And before the game, I was like, hell no, that guy's going to play. He's going to rub some dirt on it, and he's going to be, and even in a game where it, you know, didn't matter a whole ton to them in the standings, but I just think he's a huge gamer. And I think that those minutes where Jokic is out and Murray is leading the unit versus a LeBron-led unit is one of the biggest keys to the series, because one of the things that they'll do is they'll just clear out a side for Murray. And if the guy across from him can't guard him, he's going to be able to put up points at volume. And so, yeah, he's one of those guys, Mike. I think the world of Jamal Murray as a player.
Yeah, I'm a little lower on Murray than you, but certainly very high on him in general.
Yeah, yeah, most people are.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so to me, it's sometimes tough to parse because Murray has very rarely played without Jokic. And I think Jokic is the single player in the league. This used to be LeBron for a number of years, but he makes the game so much easier for every single one of his teammates, and most of all Murray. And Murray also helps Jokic a lot. So, like, I don't want to take that credit away from him, but, like, he's much better than Mo Williams. Like, I'm just trying to think of, sure, like, an early LeBron where people are like, damn, like, Mo Williams did some similar stuff. Jamal has more of a bag of, like, a Kobe. He was a Kobe guy, you know, so he's got a lot of the Kobe stuff. And he's good when he gets to the rim, better than you think, finishing with both hands. He's great in the mid-range. Like, he's great from three. But his efficiency has gone way up from earlier in his career when it was like 40%, 43%, 45%. And I guess I'm saying way up, really. It's now 48%, 48%. And his shot volume, he takes 6 threes a game now out of his 17 shots. And in those other, like outside of the threes where he was a ridiculous 43% this year, that's a absurd number for somebody that gets that volume. Like, that's a great shooting. But he misses a lot of twos. And like, that's how that overall field goal percentage is a little bit lower. And like, assist to turnover ratio, good, not great. It's like 6.5 to 2. So I just think, like, what's the delta between Aaron Gordon's defense, or I guess this would be Aaron Gordon's offense and Jamal Murray's defense? Because he's not like a complete weak spot on defense, but he is the way that the Lakers should be thinking about. He's the guy that you want to try and figure out how to get on you and attack. And like, that to me pulls a little bit back from a player when I start to get into the like all-star. And again, not arguing he's not an all-star, but I don't think that the defense there is like more similar to Austin Reeves' defense in some ways, you know, than it is. And of course his offense is better than Austin Reeves's. It's just that to go to the level of like best non-all-star of all time, man, I might. It's probably a good argument you have there for Murray.
That's a different pod. That's a different pod, Mike. We could go on a whole.
A different one. Yeah. Yeah, but like so Darius, maybe you can come in between here. I don't think that sounded disrespectful or anything to what Murray is. Maybe that's just the player type, right? I love the guy that's a little closer to two way that can still impact, because there's a lot of guys that are better defensively than Murray that are as good offensively. And when I say a lot, I mean like the All NBA. Like a lot of top guys, not a lot of other guys, but enough for me there. What do you think about Murray in this case?
For one, I think Murray's underrated defensively. Our season ended on a LeBron drive to the basket where he had a really smart peel off in game 4, trying to tie the game, and Murray peeled off and got the stop on that. I think he's just a very heady player, can help on the defensive boards. So yeah, we can have our debate at another time. And I think that's a fun topic, is best player to never make an All-Star game. But between Gordon, forgive me, I didn't answer the Gordon part. I'll get to that next time it goes swings by me, D. But between Gordon and Murray, Lakers are going to have to guard them. And so let's actually start with Murray, since he is that on-ball guy. And yes, the other thing I wanted to say, you brought up the point, D, about Jokic leading the league by far in touches. I agree with the overall point that, of course, it's easier to play with Nikola Jokic than somebody else, but that's not always super easy for a guard. Most guards have an on-ball type of history, and that's how they got into the league, where having a center hold onto the ball that much, and you've got to cut off of the ball, know how to run off of screens, be able to catch and shoot, but then be able to have that on-ball type of bag and lead your own unit. I think that's trickier, and Murray does it very well. And so I think those minutes where Jokic is out and Murray's leading them is super key. So what are some of the keys to defending him?
So let's go to break here, because we haven't taken our second break. And when we come back, we will talk about that some.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I think the bridge between both your points is that, yes, Pete, most guards have a certain desire for the ball. I think, to Murray's credit and to Jokic's, to Mike's point about Jokic's greatness and how he can make a player better, is that I think Murray quickly understood that one of the ways that he could be optimized is by leveraging Jokic's gravity both with and without the ball in order to help himself. And this is what makes Murray such a challenge for the Lakers to defend. It's not only the pick and roll, it is the DHO game, and it is his isolation game. And it's his ability to relocate to many different areas of the court and still be a supreme shot maker and shot creator when that duty does shift to him. I do think it's super important for the Lakers to win the minutes when Jokic is not in the game, and that means the minutes where Murray is in the game with multiple other Denver players. And in the playoffs, Mike Malone likes to go to these groups where it's just like, it's almost everyone else. So it's Murray, it's KCP, it's Aaron Gordon, and it's Michael Porter Jr. Or it's three starters, including Murray, and then a couple of the bench guys, mm-hmm. right? And it's winning those minutes against those units is paramount. And part of it, at least, is going to be what can you do defensively? And this is where I think the bench unit of Gabe, D'Lo, Taurean, LeBron, and Jackson is going to be super important against those groups that do not have Jokic and are led by Murray. Because the singular matchup that I'm looking forward to the most is the one in the middle part of the game, where what can Gabe Vincent do in order to try to disrupt Jamal Murray? And normally I wouldn't look at a small guard and say, what can you do against this dude? Dennis Schroeder did not have a ton of success against Jamal Murray last season. But the thing I like about Gabe is that he is a much sturdier defensive player, and that he is just a stronger point of attack defensive player. Both him and Dennis are excellent at getting over screens. But the thing about Gabe is that once he is over the screen, he is harder to dislodge once he's in front of you again, whereas Dennis could be knocked off. And for a shot maker of Murray's caliber, I think you need to be able to close that distance and not get knocked off your space, mm-hmm. because he wants to come off of that screen. And even if you're there with him, use his bigger frame, mm-hmm. knock you backwards, and then elevate and shoot over the top of a smaller player. And this is where I'm intrigued by Gabe's ability to both stay in front and stay connected, and maybe force, Mike, one or two extra misses a game from a player who has basically killed the Lakers with every big shot. Pete opened the pod with this, the level of shot making they had last season. I just watched a supercut this morning of all of these shots that these dudes hit against the Lakers last playoffs. And honestly, it was disheartening to sort of relive it again. But it was also a moment of clarity of, you know what? Those were difference-making shots. And if you can have some of the difference-making shots not go in at the same rate they went in last season, then it can make a difference for you in the other direction. And that's what I'm sort of looking for from Gabe just a little bit is, can you turn one or two of those makes into misses? And if you can, over the course of a game and then potentially over the course of a series, you can pull the rope back in your direction. So I don't want to put it all on Gabe, but I'm talking about the bench unit specifically here and where I think some gains will need to be made for the Lakers if they're to have a chance in this series.
I was going back and watching some of the March game where the Nuggets pull away late, right? The game's tight. They end up winning by 10. They outscore the Lakers by 10 in the fourth quarter. So Jokic goes 16 for 25 and was just hitting ridiculous shots throughout the game. And that's too good. Some of that has to come back if the Lakers are going to handle Denver. He can't be that good. And he was for basically these last 2 years, but some of that's got to be pulled back a little bit. That was the Michael Porter Jr. game. I think Pete referenced this earlier, right? He was 5 for 5 from three. He made 10 shots overall and didn't miss. Murray, not super efficient, but had 11 assists to 2 turnovers. So that was the game where KCP missed. But then Justin Holiday comes in and bangs 3 threes off the bench and goes a +8 in his minutes and carried that unit, that second unit that doesn't have what last year's did in a Bruce Brown. So that's the kind of thing. Peyton Watson, Justin Holiday, Reggie Jackson, it can't be one of those guys that comes in. But where I think the Lakers have an edge here, or Pete, did you want to jump on that?
No. I will jump in. I'm going to kick it back to you with a question once you're done. So finish your point and I'll swing it. I'll pass it back.
Do it now, because I was gonna pivot to a quick chat I had with D'Lo, which is
that's much more interesting than what topic. I was going to say. Please continue.
Well, okay. So I just in watching and kind of breaking down that game, and the Lakers played Cam Reddish 19 minutes, and they were rough minutes when he was in, and I don't think that he's going to play in this context. Prince only played 12. Dinwiddie played 20. And I think that, so insert Gabe into that,
right?
Remove Reddish. And that's a big upgrade to me for what the bench group is. But to me, D'Lo, I think we don't discuss in that game. Now, he didn't light the world on fire, but he had 17 points in 31 minutes. He had 3 assists. He didn't turn the ball over. He was a +2. He was much closer to just how he's been. And I think he's going into this series confident and wanting to get shots up. He knows how last season went. I think there was a dynamic with Dennis that he's alluded to before. I think there was the Bruce Brown athleticism difference.
Yep.
And I just think that you get the D'Lo that we've seen. And granted, he had a couple of tough games, even as early as last week. But he got out of it in the New Orleans games. He wants to battle defensively. He wants to be on the floor. He thinks that what he does is essential to them not just completely clamping in on the LeBron AD screen roll. I just was impressed by the mentality that he had going into this one. And that is so far from the D'Lo that was in this series last year that, Denver isn't adding anything from last year, right? Other than another year of continuity and the things we just talked about that are always difficult. And if the Lakers can add that, on top of the Vincent thing, I just think that D'Lo element to me is going to be super important.
That's part of the reason to believe. And that's the flip side of the, are they going to make every shot? They can't possibly make all of these shots again. And maybe they do. But it's also a decent argument to say D'Lo won't be as bad of a shooter as he was in the previous series. And I feel like we can depict that series as being closer than it was, but some people can depict it as not being close at all in a sweep. And it's actually somewhere in between where it was decently competitive games, but Denver was definitely in control of them. But there are enough things on the table between Gabe coming back, between just us knowing who we are way more. That game you were talking about, that March game.
Off.
Yeah, that was the first game.
Between games is a big thing.
Yes,
that was
it is.
Every other day. Yeah.
And the you were talking about that March game. That's the only time we've played them with this starting group. And so there are just so many places where it's like, hey, we just got to be able to make up territory in a couple of these places, D, and then we're in good shape. And so that D'Lo to me is a huge swing factor. But even on the defensive end, man, talk to me a little bit about D'Lo on defense. Mike was talking about how he's very much in a ready to go. So what can he bring to the table?
So we were talking about defending Jamal Murray. That's not going to be D'Angelo Russell's job, right? Mm-hmm. That's going to be Austin Reeves' job. And so Godspeed, Austin, you're going to be putting a ton of screen and handoff situations, and you're going to have to hold on. D'Lo has a very important defensive job in that he has to defend KCP. And KCP, we know this as Laker fans, he plays with exceptional motor as an offensive player. And he runs hard, he runs to the corners, and he does not make a lot of mistakes in terms of where he is positionally offensively, and is very sharp in his movements and is a very good shot maker, particularly when he's shooting the ball in rhythm. This is going to be a very important defensive positioning game for D'Lo and an understanding of not getting caught up as a ball watcher in help situations and staying connected. And I think that this is true for whoever guards KCP and for whoever guards Michael Porter Jr. Porter Jr. went 10 for 10 in that last game. One, because he can get hot and he is an exceptional shooter. But two, because he got some looks on late closeouts, yep, and times where the guys got caught ball watching, and then suddenly the ball is in Michael Porter Jr.'s hands and he's stepping in to a jumper that he's more than capable of making, particularly after he's seen a couple go through the net. And so defensively, what I'm looking for D'Lo is what he did in the Pelicans games, particularly the game that on the regular season finale on the Sunday, which was a super competitive and spirited defensive effort where he made all of his rotations and he leveraged his physical tools that he had to the best of his abilities. And if he is playing locked in defense, then I'm going to be fine with whatever D'Lo does defensively, just because I know that his ceiling stops at a certain floor and other players' defensive ceilings goes up a few floors higher, and that's fine, right? For me, the conversation about D'Lo is much more about what he's going to bring offensively. I think he's in the mental space and at a level in terms of like how he's playing from a skill perspective to impact the game offensively, particularly in some of those bench units.
Well, just one kind of final thought, big picture thought. In playing his team a second year, like that you played the previous year in the postseason, there's some level of just who can stand to die less, you know, and uh-huh, just how, like, does Denver, yes, do they desperately want to repeat? Do LeBron and AD desperately want to avenge last year's victory and have some shot? Do they believe that they can really not just beat Denver, but go all of the way? Like that emotional and mental, mm-hmm, factor can be a big difference. I guess one of the things that stands out the most to me when it happened was like, the Heat get the Ray Allen shot, you know, and then game six, they eventually win game seven, and San Antonio just absolutely murders and slaughters the next season because they're so mad and so frustrated about it. Different teams, they had younger guys, like it totally different, but that's the type of thing, like Kobe the year after they lost to Boston, my first year in LA. So we haven't thought about that as much because this is just kind of like, play. Oh, wait, the play-in. Oh, who are they going to play? Oh, it's Denver.
It happened so fast. Now, it was like we were fighting for our lives, Mike, and now we're like at the final boss.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I want to just take a pause almost, and like I just wonder, is there a speech, you know, like in either one of these locker rooms? At Denver, you know Malone's probably been yelling about this all year, right? And he's said a lot of it publicly, but Lakers internally, like, what is the belief level? And I don't know that answer because it's been very, like, they've been very pragmatic. On to the next game one against Denver. Like, LeBron's not going to say that to us. You know, Darvin Ham isn't going to say that to us. But that's something that I'm going to be watching for in game one and seeing if I can pick up any of that desperation that was certainly there for Denver last year when they had not won yet. And they really wanted to stick it to the Lakers. They did the same thing in the regular season again. And I feel like it's going to mostly be there, but it's just something I'm curious about.
The last point I was going to make is one last strategy point, Pete. And do I think we're going to necessarily see this? I don't. But I'm going to argue for it just for 30 seconds here. I really want to see a two big lineup against Denver's two big lineup. Denver plays a two big lineup. Their two big lineup is Nikola Jokic and Aaron Gordon. They treat Aaron Gordon like a center. Nikola Jokic is a Nikola Jokic. He is a one of one. He is an individual player. He is someone who does whatever he needs to do on the court. The fact that positionally he is a center, that's great. They treat Aaron Gordon like a center. He spaces to the three-point line some, and then he dives from the corner all of the time and sets screens and goes to the offensive glass. He does big man things. The Lakers have played two big lineups against the other teams that play two big lineups. I just want to see some of this against this Nuggets team. It doesn't have to be for an extended stretch. It doesn't have to be this huge part of the game plan. I just want them to try it. The things that they have done against this team have not worked. You know how I know? Because the biggest stat going into this series is that Denver has won 8 straight games against this Lakers team. 8 straight games. That means the Rui guarding Jokic stuff, the LeBron guarding Jokic stuff, the AD guarding Jokic stuff, all of it has had a ceiling in terms of how successful it's been. I'd like for them to try one other thing. And if we don't see it, we don't see it. I'm just making the case before game one, because after this, we're going to be reacting to games, and that will be that.
Darius, I hold on. I stopwatched you because I knew there was no damn way you were going 30 seconds. And I, just like a Giannis free throw, that was the last time I enacted the stopwatch. and you got to 130, baby. And I knew it. I just was going over 1 minute, but you went to 130 because you like to cook. And I was here ready for it, and I appreciated it.
I am mad at it. The two big lineup thing that we've talked about throughout so much of this season, for me, the vast majority of it is a regular season argument. But there are like two or three teams in the league, and we were talking about this the other day, D, where it actually is an important look to have in your bag. And I am very disappointed that we don't really have it. We haven't seen a ton of that AD Hayes type of look. We saw it more with AD and Wood, because Wood can technically shoot threes, I guess, right? Anyway.
He can space the floor.
Yeah. So I do wonder if that is something that we see later. That back part of the first quarter is, again, a place that I have really circled, where that's the place where if we're getting killed right there and need to make an adjustment, I think that should be the first place. Just closing thought, just in general, this Lakers team has a really nasty defensive fastball. That's something we've seen at several points over the course of this season. It's more difficult to do against Denver because so much of the way the Lakers are constructed is it's basically most teams, they have a guy on the perimeter that's going to try to attack the rim, either off of a drive or just get there very fast. And the whole point is for AD to meet you there. And it's hard to get there faster than AD or at an angle where he can't disrupt the shot. And so AD is great in those matchups. But Jokic's way of going about it and the way that Denver largely does it is to slow down and go through him. And so that's where having that personnel, I think Rui starting from game one, rather than being a crapper down 3-0, let's start him in game four type of thing, is going to help. But this Lakers team does have a nasty fastball that they can access that I think finding there and getting there is super important. And that's part of why I have the advocacy for the trapping. And I think that being able to disrupt them before they get into their shot, disrupt their ball handling, speed up KCP, make him make fast decisions, make Michael Porter Jr. do the same. Mike, we don't have time for it now, but I was going to ask you your thoughts on Peyton Watson and Christian Brown. Those are the same type of guys that we want to try to speed up. It requires a great deal of effort for sure, but all of the conservation, all of the, oh, we don't practice earlier in the season, we don't do this, we've got to keep it in the tank, oh, they can't bring it tonight because they're, you know, LeBron's 39 and all that. This is it. This is the time to empty the clip. This is the series to do it in. All of that conservation was for this type of series. And I think that that is going to manifest itself on the defensive end more than anywhere. And if they can do that, they can get enough wins to where I think their offense can get them some W's overall. So we'll wrap it up here. Went a little long. Got game one tomorrow. We will record either tomorrow night or the morning after. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
fires. It's good. They will. Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
Rebound of Lowry. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. With his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two, one.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable. For the victory. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant.
Yeah.
And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.